Aiken City Council meeting, December 12th. Yes, it is. work session this evening. We have one item to discuss, and that's a review of the audit. And Mr. LeDuc, would you like to take it from there, please?
Yes, it's always an exciting time whenever you do the budget. And it's even more exciting when the audit comes through that the budget and everything you did during the year worked out well. So tonight we're here to present to you our annual audit with Lori Smith, who is with Elliott Davis, and they're our new auditing firm. If you recall, for many years we had Cherry, Beckett, and Holland, and we're very pleased with everything that came out, and so I'll ask Anita to come up, introduce Lori, and be happy. This should be a banner day for you, Anita. You should be really happy.
Thank you. I tried to go around and introduce Lori to each of the council members so that you could see her one-on-one. She is out of Greenwood, and I appreciate her coming in tonight. So she has a good report, I believe, and I'll turn it over to Lori. Thank you.
Anita's going to hand you some financial highlights, a summary. We're going to kind of walk through this lengthy document fairly fast tonight. You know, as your external audit firm, we're always available. Should you have questions, feel free to give us a call. We'll be glad to try to address any questions or answer any issues that you have. We do appreciate being awarded the contract to audit the city. I don't know if you know much about Elliott Davis. We are a fairly large accounting firm. We're in the top 50 firms in the United States as far as size. Hopefully y'all all got this highlighted version. I'm going to refer to a lot of information in here. Your financial statements, of course, is this other document that's a lot more pages to it. And I know Kim and Anita are working on your CAF, or your Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, that will be released. And looking at your financial highlights, one thing that we're charged to do as our external audit firm is to go over our audit results. The first thing you will see in this document is a letter. What it's saying is that we have issued an unqualified opinion on your financial statements. What that means is a clean opinion on your financial statements as far as the fair presentation and the presentation in accordance with governmental accounting standards. We didn't have any unsuspected adjustments or significant reclassifications during the course of our audit. In looking during the course of the audit, we are charged to look at your internal controls. We found what we considered no material weaknesses or reportable conditions in your internal controls. We also look at compliance with laws and regs in conjunction with the Governmental Auditing Accounting Office Yellow Book. We found no problems with compliance with laws and regs as we tested from an audit standpoint. You also, in addition to your financial audit, have what we call a single audit. The single audit relates to the federal funds that you expend. In testing for your single audit, we found no material weaknesses related to the internal controls around the federal funds that you expended during the course of the year. We issued an unqualified opinion on your major federal award program expenses. That's also in the very back of this document, so you have an unqualified clean opinion as it relates to your single audit. During the year, we did implement a new accounting standard called GASB 40, which relates to additional disclosure on your cash, your deposits, and your investments, and we'll look at that in just a minute. We had pleased to report there were no disagreements with management during the course of our audit, and no significant concerns that we had from an external audit standpoint. We are charged with doing some inquiry related to all your operations and found no issues there. I'm going to move you to this first page, and I apologize, there's no page numbers on here, but it entitles General Fund Cash and Short-Term Investments. This first chart looks at a seven-year trend on your general fund cash and short-term investments. I think the important thing to note here is that your general fund liquidity position, cash and investments, increased $1.5 million from last year. We ended the year at June 30, 2005, at $11.3 million in cash and investments. And looking outside of the general fund and looking at the total cash and investments for the city, the next chart details that. That increased $1.9 million. Now, that's rested at $23.1 million. I will remind you that that includes your pension trust funds, and they accounted for about $1.7 million of that increase. I'm going to direct you to the new accounting standard, if you don't mind, in your other document that we implemented during the year. If you look at page 34 of your big audited financial statements, what this disclosure around cash deposits and investments was aimed at is identifying any custodial credit risk. You had no custodial credit risk at June 30. All your deposits were either insured or collateralized, so they were all safe. As far as investments, on page 34, we're required to categorize those by type. You'll see that we have the different types of investments by U.S. Treasury, U.S. government agency. Also required to disclose the maturities of those by type. You can see that most of your investments are in that category of less than 1 year or 1 to 5. That relates to your interest rate risk and your credit risk in going out long on an investment. So those are some additional disclosures that were added this year. Moving back to your charts, you'll see the next chart, and I think you've seen this for probably several years, is a chart on your general fund number of days of operating cash reserves. This chart reflects that at June 30, 2005, your cash balance represented about 195 days of expenditures. Now remember, last year at June 04, you were at 170 days, so we're up a little as far as days. Normally, I encourage my governmental entities to maintain about 3 to 6 months in this category, and you're right at your 6 months. So very financially healthy as far as liquidity. Moving to your next page, this is a chart, general fund unreserved fund balance. You'll see that your unreserved or unrestricted general fund balance increased approximately $1.7 million at June 30, 2005. Now, in looking at your big document, there's a page in here if you want to see some variances on page 49. But in summary, your actual revenues collected were about 11% greater than what you budgeted. So we collected more than we budgeted, and our expenditures were about 4% less than what we budgeted. So we over-collected revenue and under-expended our expenditures on our budget, which created the increase in our general fund. Moving down to that last chart, general fund revenues and expenses, that's where you continue to see the trend for the last 3 years that we've collected more revenues than we've expended. Moving to the next page, your proprietary funds, that's your water and sewer operations and your stormwater. The important thing to note here is that for both of these funds, our revenues exceeded our expenses for the year, the water and sewer being the biggest operation as far as proprietary, and the revenues exceeded expenditures by $1.3 million. That was largely attributable to about a 14.5% water consumption increase and lower interest expense than we anticipated. The last two charts in your book, pie charts, I thought these were interesting, just to make a few comments on. The first pie chart is at June 2004, where our revenue sources came from. And we're looking at the city as a whole. So this includes your enterprise operations and your general governmental funds. What you'll note here is that at June 30, 2004, we had approximately $55.2 million in revenues, where at June 30, 2005, we only had $36.3 million. The big thing to note is our revenues did go down, but that was something that we were keenly attuned to, and that was June 30, 2004 was the last year of our capital project sales tax revenue. So that revenue decreased $9 million, but $12 million of it was in capital project sales tax funds. Your biggest revenue source, of course, is your charges for services, which is over 50% of your total revenue. Second largest revenue source is your property tax at 20.4%. Moving to your last page, these are pie charts on your government-wide expenses. A lot of stability by function from June 30, 2004 to 2005. Your largest amount of expenditures are, of course, in your water and sewer operation, right at 32%. Second largest function by expenditures is your public safety, right at 22%. That's kind of some highlights of your financial data. I'd be glad to entertain any questions.
The question that I have, Mrs. Smith, is related to investment policy, and I'm asking this question because I don't know. I'm assuming that you have other accounts with municipalities. Do they have a formal investment policy? Are we unique in not having an investment policy?
This is the first year that everybody has been required to adopt this GASB 40 mm-hmm. on deposits and investments. I have not issued a report yet for a governmental entity, whether a municipality, county, or school district that has an investment policy, because most governmental entities in this state follow the state law, mm-hmm. and that's exactly what you do. So I'm not concerned that you don't have one, because you are following state law, which in itself directs you as to what type of investments that you can invest
okay.
and still keep your funds safe.
Lori, can you talk a little bit about the debt that the city has?
Very little.
I know it is. I did take some time to look at the bigger book here.
There is a note disclosure.
What page would that?
Look to page 39.
Most of it be on, at least.
On page 39, what you'll see disclosed, and well, you won't see disclosed, is you do not have any general obligation debt. So you don't have any debt that's tied to your general fund operations. It's very unusual. I don't know that I've ever audited a governmental entity with no GO debt, and I've been in public practice for over 20 years. The only debt you really have is your revenue bond and state revolving loan, and that's related directly to your water and sewer operation. You can see that disclosed at $7.7 million on page 39.
Mm-hmm.
You also, on page 40, you'll see, and it's very fine print, but middle of the page, the maturity schedule as far as repayment of that debt. Pretty flat principal repayments at right at $700,000 a year.
Are you saying that the debt will be repaid then in 2015 or 10 years from now?
That is correct. The last payment on those two pieces of debt, the refunding bond and the 97 bond, will be, well, actually the 97 bond is the last to be paid out in 2015.
The city of Aiken has approximately $8 million in availability for any GO bonds that we'd ever want to undertake without having to go to a referendum to the general public. So we have that ability, although we have not exercised it very often in the past.
That is correct. Your debt limit is based upon 8% of your assessed value.
If you ever got to the point where you wanted to go over that, how high could you go? Based on our numbers.
My understanding is 15%.
15% over the 8 mm-hmm. in our case.
Well, 15% in total. So that'd be an additional 7, I think, over.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I tell you what, I'm very proud, I'm sure we all are, of our financial status. And we thank Anita and her staff very much for what they do to keep this us appraised and keep everything right. And
especially proud of the ratings that we've got from Moody and Standard & Poor's. And my understanding is that that's the highest we could have, based on the size of our city and funding and that kind of thing. So I commend everybody that works on the staff and especially the finance department for what they're doing there. I had one little question here. It's a nitty one, I guess. It's on the page 108, the last page of the document. Mm-hmm. Item number 7, the threshold used for distinguishing between Type A and B programs was $300,000. What in the world does that mean?
Okay, that's a good question. That line refers to the Single Audit Act, okay? And we are required, as your external audit firm, when we're performing a single audit, to distinguish between federal programs where you expended in federal dollars more than $300,000 and less than $300,000. And so that's how we... That's part of that act, and a Type A program is more than 300, and this gets a little more complicated in that they do it by cluster. Okay, so but that's the criteria for Type A. They're higher risk. We have to test more of the larger programs that are over 300.
Okay, good. Okay. Does council have any other comments or questions or?
Good job. Thank you.
This will be on for first reading. Lori will not be here at the council meeting, so if you had any questions concerning our first reading concerning the audit, she could certainly answer that. But all we're doing is to take the budget that you approved a year and a half ago and balancing it to what we actually expend it. So that's really what's on the agenda tonight for first reading. Prior to a couple of years ago, we just accepted the audit as information, and now we're accepting it also as the final balancing.
Okay, very good. Very good. Well, we thank you for being here with us and for the work you've done. Thank you, Nada. Please tell your staff how much we appreciate their good work. We have a few minutes before we start a regular meeting. Roger, did you have anything you'd like to cover with us or go over?
Sarah has a handout, and I've been gone all afternoon. I was called for jury duty.
Lucky.
And they picked me. After the judge called me in there and said, can you be impartial with a realtor who's right next to our office, one of the judges or attorneys that we use part-time, and Jeff Wilson being there. Of course, I said I could be very impartial. So I just got back, so I'm seeing the note here that she's passed out for the first time also. But it's concerning the tree ordinance. I believe it's comments from Pat Cunning and Deborah Brooks. Those are the only comments I have. Oh, and that we also had a resignation, Councilor Wells, concerning the Arts Commission.
Yes.
Okay, you're aware of that.
Winslow.
Okay, great.
There's a second sheet.
Would that include the president? I quit the
landscape plans.
See, we're saying this is for all attached homes. Attached home required should be permanent. Exempted from this, is council's going to go ahead and view it anyway. And that may be his question. I've been reading up to sign the book. We're going to come up with an attached zone.
Right.
But again, you could have commercial, you know, residential,
right.
Single-family homes, you have attached homes.
Right.
Would the HUD be exempt from tree survey ordinance, or would it fall under this?
Jane?
Versus a standalone.
I haven't gotten this before.
Yeah,
this one.
Yeah,
she's only
done it
for the
cousin.
We have
no control
right now,
though. You can tell somebody they can
take
down a
temperature.
Yeah.
I thought it was Janice. Yeah. Miss Janie.
How can control we need?
That's a little bit different.
But now, you know, and you could ask them
if you add shrubbery and trees after you get ready to build in that area.
You can tell them whatever you want to.
Okay.
So that's what we said.
As long as the developer want to be exempt.
I guess the developer would say tree survey on 400 acres would be ridiculous. For 5 years.
They added it where they're not building right now.
I don't know what
when they get ready to build that year.
I thought they added it around the house.
With the seat.
It says the added trees and
stuff. This one
is
not
real high.
I don't have any prerogative to ask for what. Maybe not real high. I don't know why you would want us necessarily say that to the people. Somebody's trying to make me look quite
sure. I better pass a small tree drive.
Is it a spin or what?
So right now we've got the ability to
right now you
to ask.
Right now the tree ordinance does not apply to residential.
At all. For single family ownership.
Right.
We're going to ask that it apply to any attached home from duplex on up. Pat's saying if you have a HUD, you need to. Would that be exempt, or would that be those attached homes in there have to have that tree survey? And therefore, the HUD would have to have a tree survey. Interesting question.
But yet we still get to specify what trees come down, which ones don't.
If we want to.
I mean, you've got the ability.
Yeah, the ability.
Within a PUD.
Right. Or in a PUD, you could say, we're not concerned about trees at all.
Yeah. So why do we need a tree survey in the PUD? If we've got the ability anyway to say, hey.
How do you know where the trees are? You can't specifically identify a particular tree that you want to save.
Yeah, but we've got. Okay, there would be no tree survey at all given.
Oh.
I don't either.
Well, I decorated as you know today.
Oh, you did. The entrance.
What'd you put?
I did.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Aiken City Council meeting of December 12th, 2005. Appreciate you being here with us. And if you would please stand with us as we have our prayer and our pledge of allegiance. Dear Lord, we thank you that once again we can come into these chambers to discuss the city's business. We praise you for who you are and what you've done for us this year, Lord, as we come to the end of the year. We look back and we see your workings. And we thank you, Lord, for being with us and the wisdom that you've given us, the guidance you've given us. As we look forward into the next year, new year, we have many challenges and opportunities as well. And we pray that you'd be with us, Lord, as we go through next year, too. And Lord, we thank you for our many citizens that work so hard to help improve our community. We thank you for our staff. We thank you for our council. You've truly blessed us in so many ways. And Lord, our hearts go out to service men and women who are defending our country and fighting, and in many cases, giving the ultimate sacrifice that we might have a good life, a place to live in peace. And Lord, we thank them and their families. We pray that you would be with their families, Lord. So, Father, we thank you for all the many blessings and many more than we mentioned. And just ask you to continue to be with us. We pray that our minds would be open to your guidance and your wisdom. And we'll give you the glory, Lord, for all things that we do well. In your name we pray. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With any additions or deletions to the agenda this evening? If not, do we have a motion and a second to approve as this agenda?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. A consideration of the minutes of the work session and regular meeting of November 28th, 2005. Any changes, corrections, comments? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
Move for approval of those minutes, Mr. Mayor, as presented to council.
My second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Under all business, we have appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have 8 pending appointments, and you have 3 before tonight. Councilmember Wells would like to make the appointment of Lynn Henry to the Design Review Board, and she would be replacing Leland Reynolds, who has resigned. Mayor Cavanaugh would like to recommend Lee Boylston to the Board of Zoning Appeals, and Joan Bristol be reappointed to the Park Commission. And these are the 3 appointments before you tonight.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Do we have a motion and second to take these all at once, one time?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
Yeah. I want to take them all at once. That's not the problem. Roger, I appreciate your paragraph about the construction. I did not realize. I did realize that we had insisted that someone with construction experience be on the design review committee. So Mr. Millage and Mr. Mary fit that requirement as far as
Mary has a contractor's license, and James Millage worked for the Housing Authority for, I think, 20-some years when he retired.
Okay. Okay, anything else? Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item number 2, appointment to...
Nominations.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. We can do that at this time.
Dick, you want to go ahead first?
Yes, I would like to appoint Kay Bodenheimer, replacing Lee Poe on the Park Commission.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to appoint John Burkhalter to replace Robert McCartney on the Park Commission.
John Burkhalter. Okay. Any others?
I have a question, and if anybody has any specific people. I've been trying to find, I have an appointment that's not listed on here on the Arts Commission, and I've approached some people, but they meet at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, and unless you're retired or have your own business, it's very difficult to get to that meeting, and 3 of them have not been able to. You know what I'm saying? They just cannot be at a 9 o'clock Monday morning meeting. It also concerns me that citizens might not be able to be at a 9 o'clock Monday morning meeting. And I just wondered if we could perhaps request that this commission meet at a more convenient time for citizens.
I would agree with that, too.
I see no reason why we can't request that.
Yeah.
No.
Well, is there any specific reason why this committee meets at this time?
Glenn, you want to speak to that? I believe it's the commission that kind of voted to found that to be the best time.
Yeah.
What Roger said is exactly the reason that the members of the committee met. I think the first time we met in the evening, and then they talked and they voted. And Monday at 9 o'clock was the commission members' recommendation. Is the best time that they could get to the meetings. Our acting chair is here right now, and it was all over the place as to when folks would like to meet, but Monday at 9 seemed to be the best time for the members of the commission.
Glenn, have you all had any, here I am, any concerns expressed to you and the, you've had that concern expressed with time?
We've had, our attendance from the members has been pretty good. I think we've only had maybe one who hasn't been able to make a couple of the meetings, but the attendance from, now we haven't had at this point a lot of guests or public coming to the meetings.
On the other hand, probably they're disheartened at the very idea of showing up at 9 o'clock.
They could be.
Anybody working in a regular job certainly can't come.
Sure. We meet again January 9th, so second Monday in January. I'd be glad to bring it back up to the commission and address it with them if you'd like us to, and we can talk about it.
Glenn, you're meeting monthly?
Yes, ma'am. Second Monday of the month.
Yeah. I noticed that the brochure, however, our booklet on commissions actually says meetings as necessary or something. It doesn't really say this. It's the second
Monday of the month.
Second Monday of the month.
Yes, sir.
Was that changed by the commission itself?
When that book was printed originally, I don't know if the commission had informed at that point and had determined when they were going to meet.
Okay, so they established their own meeting schedule.
So, Jane, is it your appointee that can't meet?
I don't have an appointee tonight because my member resigned.
Okay.
And I've approached three different people, and, well, they all said
they couldn't.
9 o'clock on Monday morning, I can't. You know, I can't be at a meeting at that time. And it occurs to me that not only some members, potential members, but also the public might have a hard time doing that.
Glenn, what time does the Recreation Commission meet?
5 or 5:30.
Okay, so they're in the afternoon as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And all of our committees, all of them other than this one? Mary Ellen, would you like to address this? Since you're the acting chairperson.
The other ones meet anywhere from 4 o'clock p.m. on.
So 4 o'clock's even better than early in the morning, though, I would think.
Mary Ellen Krippner, I'm not disagreeing with Glenn, not by any means, but I do need to tell you this has been a great concern to all of us. We have a problem with it. There are two people that can probably meet without any problem at 9 o'clock. The rest of the people have a problem and they have to do something special for it. Now, when we voted on it, was at the very first meeting last April, and two of the commissioners weren't even appointed yet at that time. And as it turned out, the two of them that weren't appointed at that time are the ones that have a lot of trouble. And I don't think she would mind me saying that Keisha has a great deal of trouble too, because she has meetings at school at that time of day. And we tried to point this out to our ex-chairman, and it didn't get anywhere. And so we tried to say, you know, we'd be willing to come at 4. My argument was that it would be easier for somebody to leave work a little bit early than not to get there in the morning. And you know, Glenn has nothing to do with it. It has nothing, you know, I'm certainly not
blaming. We can't blame him for anything here. That's a change, isn't it?
We need him him for a lot of things, but yeah. Seriously, it is a problem. It's a problem. In fact, I think one of the reasons that one of our commissioners has just resigned is because she can't do it at 9 in the morning because she has a health problem, and she has to attend to that. So it's been very difficult. We've had a terrible time. We adore Karen Gordon, and she can't get there. And Keisha missed today, and she's missed two or three meetings for the same reason. And I kept bringing that up, that I thought that it would be better if we could come up with a different time. Kay Taylor and I have no trouble. We have no trouble meeting any time of the day. Because, you know, but I agree with Jane. I'm sure she's having a terrible time finding somebody if they're working. It's a problem.
Why can't it be brought up as an agenda item?
I would be happy to bring it up as an agenda item. I brought it up several times before, and I was always, I won't say voted down, I was stopped from continuing with it because it was a given that it was, that was when we were going to meet, and that was it. And so, consequently, those of us that were trying to get it changed couldn't do it. But I am more than willing to bring it up, and I think it would be successful to change it to some other time. We meet in that room over there, so we're not, you know, involving this chamber or anything.
Right. Well, you could bring it up at your next meeting then and discuss it.
I will definitely put it on the agenda.
And for all the reasons that we talked about, plus any others.
It will help, I think, you can think of.
And if it could even.
And I understand that. I've understood that from day one.
Good.
Problem with it.
If it could even be 5, it would be better. I mean, I know 5 would be better.
And we have no objections to that.
Great.
I'd be
That's
more than
just
willing
great.
To meet at 5 o'clock. I don't care. I personally thought 9 o'clock in the morning was too early.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I will guarantee we will put it on the agenda for the next meeting.
Very good. Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
Thanks. And Jane, thanks for bringing that up, because it is important that not only for the people on the committee, but the public could to get to the meetings if they desire to be there. And, okay, were there any more nominations for board members? We finished that. Kay Bodenhammer and John Burkhalter. Okay. Okay, now we've got a motion and a second for the appointments as read earlier. Any comments on that? If not, show of hands, please. Oh, no. Okay, passes unanimously. Okay. Item 2, then, appointment to the ADDA board. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, this was brought up at the last meeting when Mr. Sprawls was nominated to sit on the Aiken Corp board meeting. A number of you had indicated that to determine what the status would be with the ADDA board. At the December meeting, I asked this of the board. They stated that currently there is one appointment on there for city council. Don has expressed that he would like to stay on it, but the board itself stated that there could be other ones if council wanted to nominate it, and there are vacancies currently. So if council would like to select another council member for the ADD board, I could then bring it to them at the January meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to nominate Jane Waters as the member on the ADDA.
Okay, I second that.
Mr. Mayor, I have a nomination too.
Okay.
I'd like to nominate Don Wells for the position.
Just as an aside, if I might, that's fine. I accept that. Was it second to that?
I'll second it so I can hear what you have to say.
I was going to say it anyway, but
okay.
And perhaps I should have didn't.
Okay.
I should have said it earlier. I was at the meeting too, Roger, and you recall that there are other vacancies existing on the ADDA board, and so therefore anyone, including another council person, could be on the board as well. As long as we don't have 4 council members on that board, since that would be a majority. And but you could have, yeah, it'd be a quorum. So we could have another person on there as well. That's what I'm saying.
You could have another one on the Aiken Corporation, too, if you're going to go that route.
Huh?
If you're going to go that route, you can put another one on the Aiken Corporation.
Well, I don't know about that. I just heard the question asked, and I heard the answer at the meeting, and I do know that they said that they had vacancies, that could be other people that might desire to be on ADDA board.
What time does this board meet?
4:00.
4:00.
Usually.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. The first motion and second, Mr. Attorney. We can go with that first.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. We have a motion and second. All in favor of appointing Jane to the ADDA board. Show of hands, please. Okay. 3. Oppose. Okay. It does not pass 4-3. 3-4, whatever. Okay, Don, you made your motion.
Yes.
We have a second with Beverly.
Right.
So we'll call for the question here. All in favor of Don Wells for that ADDA position. Show of hands, please. Okay. That passes. Oppose, just for the record, because we've already voted for Jane. So Don, you're the new member. Congratulations. Okay. Item 3 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend Chapter 32 of the City Code for Solid Waste. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending Chapter 32 of the City Code of Aiken, South Carolina, regarding disposal, recycling, and handling of solid waste in city limits. At the first meeting when we discussed this, this ordinance is here to really ratify what we've been doing for the last 6 months. Council has discussed this on more than one occasion. We came up with a set of new regulations and procedures as far as how we pick up our trash and putting out roll carts. I believe Larry, where's Larry? There you are in the corner. This week you should have all the roll carts out, or next week, including Jim Lakes?
It'll be the next week, and then we'll start on Jim Lakes.
Okay. So we will have this month everybody inside the city as we had previously in Jim Lakes, hopefully by the end of this year. With that in mind, we felt it was time to go ahead and ratify and to fully implement, although we're doing it already, the changes that we have in the ordinance. And all these changes are just reflecting what we have been doing for the last 6 months. City Council approved this ordinance at the November 28th meeting on first reading. This is the second reading public hearing consideration of an ordinance to amend Chapter 32 of the City Code concerning solid waste.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone in the audience would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move for adoption of this ordinance on second reading in public hearing, and after the second, I do have a question.
Okay.
A second.
Okay. Comments? Go ahead.
I wanted to know if anybody knows, staff or anybody knows, where you can buy bags to fit this new receptacle.
90-gallon bag.
90-gallon bag.
That's a good question.
Larry, did you hear that, Larry?
One that would be thrown away every time that when they tip it out? Is that what you're looking at? Or?
It's fine if they take it. I just, y'all know what I think about those things that grow in them, but.
Do you use the little trash bags?
I do.
Put stuff in? That's a personal question, I realize.
And let me just tell you that, and I'm not the only one with this problem, because somebody else asked me. In fact, I saw someone shopping ask and came up to me and recognized me and asked me about that, because they put the smaller bags in there, and if you put other things in there, then You say you can put everything and you'll take away everything that gets in that trash can. Well, sometimes you put stuff in there that will puncture the bags that you already have in there. And that makes for a horrible mess. And I think maybe if you can line the bag, it might be a little bit better than...
I'm not aware of any bags that are made specifically to fit those. I know you can buy contractor cleanup bags at both Lowe's and Home Depot.
Okay.
And those contractor cleanup bags are very large size. They're used by contractors, you know, getting debris out of buildings that they're constructing. Now, what size they are, I really couldn't tell you, but those are about the largest bags that I'm aware of. Now, I use the smaller bags and put those in, and I put a lot of material in there also. And occasionally a bag does get punctured, but we haven't seen that to be a real problem unless folks are throwing away some fairly liquid material in the bags.
I don't know how big, large the leaf bags are. I've got some leaf bags. Are they 33
gallons?
33 or something?
I've got an even bigger bag than that, but it still doesn't fit that big.
Well, the contractor bag must be the largest. You think that's the largest?
Contractor is the largest that I've used. I've used those personally, and they'll come up almost to my chest. They're so large. Now, again, what gallons they are, I don't know.
I would like for you to encourage them to please take that can out to the road and dump it rather than reach in, because I thought that was the whole reason, one of the major reasons we bought it.
They're not reaching in.
They're not supposed to be reaching in at all.
Oh, is that right? They don't put it on the back and lift up?
I've never seen
it. Now they do. But I think it's something to encourage, because I don't think it's happening everywhere, and I understand that. And I think it's dangerous. That's the whole. I mean, that's why I ended up voting for this. Was
that is correct. We will have another educational session with our folks.
I don't think it needs to be a big deal. I just think, just to reiterate, that it's to save injuries, and that's the main thing.
Certainly, yeah.
It scares me to see them reaching into these things.
Just a quick comment: they are reaching in the bins most of the time, and they're also throwing the recycle bins from the truck
that hung
the yard
in front of the break. That's been happening.
Yes.
Okay. Did you hear that, Larry?
Yeah, yes, sir. That's our folks that have the khaki breeches with the blue stripes.
Right.
We do trade crews around rather often on those. We are looking into possibly using one city employee and one inmate on the back of the recycle trucks to see if we could help that situation. But to do that, we will have to put that inmate and replace one of our other folks on the back of a regular garbage truck. And, of course, we do not allow inmates to go off of the street. They're definitely not allowed to go into a backyard. So anywhere we would have a backyard service, and we do have some, the inmate could not get that.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful what we do there.
Is this a choice job for the inmates? Do they enjoy this? Is this something they want to do?
No, sir, it is not.
They're told
just
to do
the
it.
Opposite.
They're told to do it.
They are more or less told to do it. We have had inmates that literally chose to go back to the camp rather than work a recycling truck. It is one of the hardest jobs that we have. They would much rather pick up litter, mow grass, dig trees out, anything in horticulture besides this.
Okay. All right.
It's hard work.
One other thing, sometimes they'll leave them either the roll cart or the recycle bin in the driveway, too, mm-hmm. so that you have to get out of your car and move it in order to either go in or out.
Right. And the part of the problem we've had there is that we were trying to leave them adjacent in the grass, and we have had some folks that have issued complaints that, well, you're leaving the can on my grass. And so essentially what they try to do is where they find the can, they try to get it within a couple of feet of where they find it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't normally get complaints.
Right. Okay.
We are still doing recycling then.
Yes, ma'am.
It still makes sense to put things in those bins.
Yes, ma'am. We are recycling. We did have some problems with recycling after we had the two trucks destroyed in the accident this summer. We now have a full complement of trucks, so we are recycling on a daily basis.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Larry.
If I can make a comment, I read in the paper, in the talk back, about having a trash police, a garbage police person, and that is not true. We do not have that. We do have, as part of this ordinance, though, that if somebody leaves the recycling bins or the roll cart out on the street for more than 24 hours, we do go back in those neighborhoods, and somebody on light duty will roll it back. And for the charge of doing that, we do put on a charge of $5. And that's the one way of getting people's attention. Now, we've been giving letters to people telling them that they had a warning, that if they didn't bring their cans back, that in the future they would be charged for that. We're not out there looking for the situation, but we are trying to get it so the cans are not left out there on the street.
Okay, sir. We have a motion and a second. Is any more comment? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Approved. Passes unanimously. Item 4 is a second reading public hearing and ordinance amending the zoning ordinance regarding tree preservation for attached single-family residential projects. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by the title. It's an ordinance amending the City of Aiken zoning ordinance regarding tree preservation. Council on numerous occasions have brought up the fact that they are concerned that when we had duplexes and triplexes and quadruplexes, anything that was not a multifamily, but actually were single-family homes, but in a attached housing situation, that several cases we were able to cite where a contractor or developer came in there and cut down all the trees. The best example that I think we keep reciting is the one at Barnwell and Morgan Street. You therefore recommended several things to change this so that it would be required that they do a tree survey and try to preserve these trees. Again, this does not involve new landscaping, but this is for the preservation here of the trees. We did include the language that you asked for on duplexes. We did hand you, as the meeting began tonight, some comments from Deborah Brooks and Pat Cunning concerning this, that I know there are some questions on that that I'm sure Ed could go ahead and discuss. And you also had asked about the attached housing and some other questions concerning it. The Planning Commission is taking up this subject as to actually coming up with a new zone for attached housing. It'll probably take them December, January, hopefully in February they'll be able to bring something back out of the Planning Commission that then you would be able to look at as far as other standards that we'll have for attached housing other than just the landscaping aspect of it. So before you tonight is an ordinance that you passed on first reading on November 28th. This is the second reading public hearing consideration of an ordinance to revise the zoning ordinance regarding tree preservation for attached single-family residential projects.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. Welcome back. So soon.
I didn't think you'd see me back
so soon. So soon.
I can't believe I'm here.
I can't be honest with
you. My name is Pat Cunning, 113 Mulberry Court, and it is totally self-serving the reason why I'm up here. I'm not trying to be really, but there are some concerns about this thing that that I want y'all to know about, and I think some of the concerns that's going to happen if we're not careful with this. I believe that you are right in having to look at this ordinance. I know the reason for the ordinance. I don't like what happened in two or three of the instances as far as some of the developments we had. Like I said, I support the concept of this in general, but I think an ordinance needs to encourage compliance, and I'm concerned what happens with land that's currently in the county that, when this passes, if it does pass, that if people are thinking about in the future, next 3, 4, 5 years, and they say, well, I may want to do some multifamily or some attached homes in here, the first thing they're going to do, quite honestly, Mr. Mayor, is get a timberman out there and get those trees off.
Believe me, and I know that I'm not saying that there's anybody who would do that, but I guarantee you when they have to go through this tree survey and then have to replace the number of trees, that would happen. I'm also concerned about the good developers that are getting somewhat tagged with this. What comes to mind is Steve Kisner and Todd Gall and the villas at Hounds Lake, which are four attached units, which this would fall under, I believe.
Absolutely.
So if he takes down pine trees, which he has to do, he can't get the units in there, then he has to try to replace them. Where do the trees go? I don't think it's a matter of the good developers not wanting to landscape, because we like trees. I have one area, Dick, that I'm developing over there on Bellwood, which are going to be three attached homes. The market, they like it. They want a lot of landscaping, but they want common area maintenance. And I wouldn't look at it today, and it's very, very heavily treed. And I'm trying to figure out how this would impact. If you have a very heavily treed area and you have to take out the trees to put the three units in, then you have to try to figure out the board feet of it, and you try to put other trees there. On this site, because it's so heavily treed, I don't know where I would put the trees. That is honest. And I think what I would like to see us do is have an ordinance that actually encourages planned unit development, planned residential. If we had that in the areas that we have our problems with, I believe that requiring green space and parks and whatever. We can talk about the area where the six plexes are put right behind the mall. And they're done because of cost, no question about it. But think about it. If that was a requirement that it be planned residential, they would have had, Roger, what is it, 20 or 25% that they have to put up for mm-hmm. green space?
25.
The problem with that, and I know that land because my company owned it, and it was nothing but these little cherry trees on it. None of it would have qualified it. Mr. Holly's dairy farm, Mr. Mayor, remember when that was there? Matter of fact, he was at the mall. None of that would have applied because there weren't any specimen trees. But if it was planned residential, he would have had to put parks and he'd had to put areas. What concerned me about that area is where the kids go. There's no place to play. There's no place to go. So this will not stop that. But what I would suggest is that, and then there's another area that concerns me. If we want to try to get development on the north side and redo 500 homes or whatever the project is on the redos, there may be some townhomes in that, Roger, that we need to do. They were going to fall into it, too. They got to do the tree survey and got to try to replace the trees. My main objective here, and it is self-serving. I'm not going to say it's not, because ours is a planned residential area. But if you go to Woodside, and I know that it works, is that if we had an ordinance to where we encouraged planned residential development and we exempted the planned residential development from the tree preservation ordinance, however, a landscaping plan would have to be submitted to the planning staff, and in that it had to show the trees that are removed, the trees that are going to be added, and the landscaping plan, and it would not be approved. If it's not approved, they want more landscaping added. This is exactly what we do on every house at Woodside. It goes to the landscaping ordinance, has to comply, and it goes through. I just think it's a better way to get people to comply. We will live with it if we have to. I mean, this one land parcel concerns me, and I'd probably have to, maybe I could add trees somewhere else or whatever, but it does concern me. You can count on the fact that there will be more trees removed because of this ordinance. You can count on that, and I do believe there's a way around it, that it can encourage better land planning, and I don't think that it would necessarily hurt to amend it to the level of encouraging good landscaping. And I believe in landscaping. That's what helps sell, and good developers want trees. We do not want trees pushed down. And Jane, I know you and I have gone head to head a few times, but I basically agree with you on this landscaping and try to save the trees. And I don't like what was done on Barnwell. But if it would have been planned residential, we could have stopped it, I believe. But that's another. And I'm not saying you can leave this as written, In other words, if somebody wants to, and one of your concerns, Jane, was if you're in a neighborhood business, that, you know, you can take all the trees down. This amendment would not affect that, I don't believe. In other words, it would just be in planned residential that they would have to go through the planning department to get their landscaping approved.
So you could live with the rest of the ordinance as is if this were added?
Yes, ma'am. The only thing I'm concerned about, and this really doesn't fix the Steve Kisner development, because and I'm somewhat concerned, I don't think that's planned residential, Roger, and that's a nice project, how he replaces the board feet of his trees, I'm not sure how that works, but what he did though, and I remember at the meeting he said he would bring it and show exactly what trees are going to be removed and what and get that approved, so technically he was doing the same thing that I'm suggesting here. Anyway, it's nice to be back, but...
Pat, what am I hearing from you that on annexations for residential property, we should really always be insisting on something that it's going to be a planned residential project?
Yes, sir.
Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm not saying this could happen, but say, for instance, somebody had about 1,000 acres they were planning to annex, or 800 or whatever that were maybe coming in, and they thought, I think it would be encouraging to say, we have this zoning, but if you go to, we want this, we want that, but there's some carrot out there to say, but we will work with you, but the landscaping is important. You know, I think Aiken, from the standpoint of, it's always been a tree city. I'm going to be right here tomorrow in front of the Planning Commission asking for a concept plan on the village, and we're trying to get it to where we got the green space, got live oaks. We're putting the things that we want. We want a village on the south side like downtown Aiken. So, you know, we encourage trees. We want trees. So I just get you to think about it. And, Mr. Mayor, I apologize for not bringing this up before. For some reason, I didn't read my package the last time, and I thought this was first reading this time. But
you probably would have had to recuse yourself anyway.
Well, that's true. That's true. But anyway, I just had to come up and at least...
Now, before you sit down, I'm sorry, we didn't communicate either. You called me twice today, and I called you back.
Well, I was at a housing committee meeting, Mr. Mayor.
State as clearly in, as you can how we could fix this.
The only suggestion,
to be better.
In order to keep the gist of where the problem is, which is, you know, if you have neighborhood business or whatever, you have to, you can put residential, you have to have the teeth that's in here. The only, what I was looking at is try to make it to where we encourage the planned residential, but you still require the landscape plan to go to the planning department. In other words, and if they said, well, we don't like this, well, it's very similar to what we do at Woodside. In other words, if we submit the plan, we got to bring a plan to them before we push the first tree over. But just by exempting planned residential PUD in this, but put it in there that they still have to submit the trees to be removed, the trees to be added, and the landscape plan to the staff, then I think that solves the problem is encouraging. That doesn't necessarily solve the problem that Todd Gall and Steve Kisner have, and I think we need to look at it from that standpoint. I don't want to. The bad part about it is we're basically punishing them, even though they've done a pretty good job. Roger, would they be grandfathered? But if they have to come back in for their next building, they would have to comply with this, would they not?
Not if we've already approved the plans.
But we haven't.
Have we approved all? But when they
was that site behind Center South.
Right. I don't remember. I don't remember whether he submitted something for the middle part or not. Do you?
No. Yeah. There's 35 units going on that site. So I mean, but the plan.
What? If the plan's already been approved, then this ordinance would not apply. If somebody's applying for the first time, then obviously this ordinance would apply to
I guess the question is, if it was done in phases and he wants to build his next four buildings,
if the overall plan has been approved, even though he's doing it
okay,
in phases.
Okay, well, then that would solve...
Then what I think you're saying, though, is the next time a Steve Kisner or someone else came along to build a high end, yes, it would apply to that.
Right, and you know, from that standpoint, if they know that, of course, they could still comply if they have a way to replace the trees. But at least this way, I think we do encourage people that planned residential is what we want in the city of Aiken. That was my, and honestly, I could live with this. I'd have to do a tree survey, and it is going to cost me money. I'm not, you know, like I said, it is self-serving while I'm up here. But it also, I do know that if you do add this, it will actually save trees because they won't be out. The people that are looking say, well, you better take those trees off now before you... I digress here, but we were looking at a parcel property right next to Woodside just because we heard it might be for sale. And I went out and looked at it, and they totally butchered it. I mean, it not a tree left. You can't see it. None of y'all will even see it because it's kind of back off the power line. We didn't want to buy it. After we saw it, we said, this just doesn't, it looked like Vietnam from the standpoint of, you know, it was awful. But that could happen. And the timber prices are up right now, and that's the part that I'm seriously, that we need to consider on this thing, because I think that would be an issue. And I think you would protect ourselves, too.
One of the things that I'm most concerned about is not even new areas that are coming in, but areas within the city that, I mean, at Design Review the other night, there was a proposal for 8 3-story units on 0.6 acres in downtown Aiken. And I said,
I don't think you could get planned residential on that, I don't think.
And I said, how, you know, if we don't have something like this ordinance, it says that attached housing has to respect the tree ordinance as far as grand trees or whatever are concerned, or submit a plan at least, then we're just... The lot's going to be clear. I mean, I don't know that this man's project will ever come to fruition because he wants to build up to the lot line and he wants to use the city's easements for green space and he wants to take down every single tree on a heavily wooded lot.
Now, you got to understand that if we adopt this amendment, it would have to be submitted to Ed or Ray, and they do a great job.
Well, this amendment wouldn't apply to that. But what I'm saying is the ordinance, I mean, the whole point of it, I think, the proposal is to make sure we don't have another situation like one on Barnwell.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's all I'm trying to figure out.
Jane, believe me, I'm in total agreement with you on that. Some of the other things that's been approved on R6,
well,
I think they should have been planned residential. I think we could have really controlled it.
And what you're saying is if we encourage planned residential,
yes, ma'am,
and make an effort not to zone things R6, I believe
that planned residential is what we should be doing, and I know we're working on roads as far as it affects some other parts of the city, and I think that planned residential is going to come up, and I think it's going to be very important for us to really focus on that.
But right now, too, let me think. Residential property can go on into other zones, into LP zones, for example. This was
ma'am.
An LP.
This would alleviate that. In other words, you could not do what happened over on Barnwell with this. He'd have to submit a tree survey or whatever, but I mean it would. But by the same token, if he came in as PUD, you then would have the overall plan. You would know it before, and then you would still have to submit, where do my buildings go, what trees do, you know.
Well, I think that would be great. I just don't like this business of zoning that's already in the city limits, and
yes,
we don't have anything to say about, you know what I mean.
Good to see y'all again.
What is the? Let me ask a question, Pat. Maybe you know, or maybe Ed knows. What is the Planning Commission looking at here? I'm reading what Roger gave us. There are several issues that the Planning Commission is currently reviewing concerning amendments for the larger issue of attached housing. And that's what we're talking about here, attached single-family housing.
Kay is here.
At this time, the Commission is recommending amendments regarding tree preservation.
What's going on here? Should we not be waiting for their recommendations to come to us? Or maybe I'm really confused as to what the Planning Commission is studying or doing and what we're looking at tonight.
I think this is just strictly as it relates to duplex and attached housing. But I think they're studying the whole...
Thank you, Pat.
The Planning Commission is looking, one of the main things is looking at the design of the units, how they look from the street, trying to get variety rather than just, say, one plain front in a row. They're trying to get some variety, so it looks better, just the design of the units. I mean, they were also dealing with tree preservation.
Well, that's what we're talking about here.
Exactly, and new landscaping. And what I heard, I think, from at least from Roger, and I think from you at various meetings, was that tree preservation was probably the most important issue. And so rather than wait and deal with all these other attached housing issues, go ahead and make a recommendation to you on tree preservation.
Okay.
So that
if we had a perfect world, we would have brought it to you all in one package, but we knew that was going to be several months down, further down the road, and so we're bringing this to you as a separate issue.
Okay. I'm trying to develop a comfort level.
Just a minute. It might be another question, or two or three or four.
I'm trying to develop a comfort level with believing that developers have the interest to protect neighborhoods. And a lot of it is based on history and where we've seen in this town development occur. And developers have gone in and just raped the land totally with trees, which adds to the charm of any neighborhood. I am not convinced that developers have the same concern depending on where they place their development in terms of protecting trees. I have an interest in protecting people, those grand and significant trees that it has been expressed in the tree preservation information that's been given to us. But I'm not comfortable with giving exemption to this tree preservation provision to any duplexes or greater unit, just saying that you can come in and be exempt from all that. I'm still not comfortable with that yet, Pat. I'm hearing what you're saying in terms of PUD, and PUD is going to protect all this, but I'm not concerned that this is going to protect all the areas within this community.
Well, the only thing I'm saying, if that amendment was passed, the only thing you would be doing is if it's zoned for the duplexes, it would just be the planned residential that would be exempted, but they would have to go through the landscaping part and present it to the planning department. The distinction here is that when I'm designing these 18 units on this parcel land, I will have to show what the footprint is. I'll actually have to bring a landscape plan to Ed and the racial, whoever, if it's Ed, and show exactly which trees to be taken out, which trees that I'll have to add, how the driveways come in, and the landscaping of the whole thing. If he looks at it and says that's reasonable, I can understand what you're doing, then he passes it. If he doesn't think it's reasonable, he says, no, I want more landscaping here, I want over. What I'm saying is that if this is passed as written, I'll live with it. I'll get my tree surveys done, and I'll do, because I'm already in the city. You know, I mean, I got at least all but about 800 acres are in the city, depending on what we decide to do in the future. So, you know, I'm gonna have to live with it, but what I'm saying is I think this is a way to encourage planned residential and protect ourselves even going forward, and I think it accomplishes both. That's what I'm saying. I'm not disagreeing with anything you said. The way this thing is written, every one of the troubled areas that this is here for,
would not have happened, or it could have happened, but it would have to gone. It would have to gone through. Well, none of them are planned residential. None of the problem areas that we're talking about were planned residential.
Could I ask a question, Roger and Ed and Pat? Wait just a minute. I mean, do you see? And council, do you see the planning director already having the right, like if there's a grand tree on a piece of property that's going to go, does he have the right to say, make that building smaller, configure this around this grand tree or anything like that?
No, I don't think you have that.
Not for attached housing. There is for commercial and multifamily.
So you have the right to do it in commercial and multifamily.
Correct.
But it's not in this ordinance. Even if the ordinance passes, you don't have that right.
So it's easy just to remove the tree.
What about if we added the same provision we have already in commercial and attached and whatever? What was the other one? Multifamily?
Multifamily.
What do y'all think about that? I mean... Seems like we have it in that.
I think that would be the way to go. What I see with this ordinance is we're going to penalize the contractors, the builders out there that's doing an excellent job in constructing these houses and taking care of our trees and even adding more trees. You know, all of a sudden now we're going to take this guy that's doing a wonderful job and say, you know, let's stick you with another hoop to jump through and spend $15,000 to do a tree survey on this. And you've been doing an excellent job all these years. And I think that there's a couple of developments that's raped the property and caused us to have to take a look at this. But if we were to take the attached single family residential projects and make them have to submit a landscape plan, which would have to be approved by the director, would that not do away with having to have that survey done? Would it not do away with throwing just the carrot out there for the PUDs, but we're just saying go ahead and submit a landscape plan that has to be approved by the planning director. And at that time, look at what trees have to be removed. One other thing that concerns me here is the same thing that concerns Pat. In the standpoint of you've got a heavily wooded piece of property, but let's say some of the grand trees are located, or two or three of them are located, to where they have to be removed. Now, we're requiring them to replace these. Now, you've got a heavily wooded area. Where are you going to put them? Mm-hmm. Short of taking out some trees to replace those trees, is that what we're going to make them do?
To answer your last question, they replant inches until they run out of room, and then they put money into a tree fund to plant trees on city property. The way the ordinance is drafted now, for attached housing, they would have to do a tree survey and provide planting strips along the property lines, and maybe hold up, not take down certain trees. But the way it's drafted now, there is no requirement for new landscaping. I mean, for you kind of have to keep the tree preservation part separate from the new landscaping part. And what you're dealing with here is just tree preservation. What new landscaping might be required is going to be addressed in what the Planning Commission is going to be dealing with in the next 2 or 3 months. But right now, this just deals with trying to preserve the trees that are there now.
But could we not require them to submit a landscaping plan to the planning director prior to any trees being cut there?
By landscaping plan, do you mean new landscaping?
Well, an existing landscaping plan plus the proposed landscaping plan, or existing trees plus the...
Sure, you can do that now if you want to. Again, I think the commission thought, and I thought, that the main focus, immediate focus, was on preserving trees that are there now. And that's what this is aimed at, not what new landscaping might be required. I mean, you can certainly do whatever you want to do, but that's what this is intended to protect, existing trees.
Let me ask the other way, Ed, if I may.
Have you seen what was suggested here, this revision to exempt planned residential from this in particular?
No.
Could I read it to you? Right, it's short. Planned residential zoning shall be exempt from the tree survey ordinance. However, any duplex or greater units must submit a landscape plan showing trees that are to be removed and a landscaping plan with trees and landscaping to be added. The landscape plan shall be submitted to the planning director or staff for approval. The suggestion was that for planned residential, this would cover. Do you think it would?
Well, again, you're getting into new landscaping in addition to tree preservation, which you can do if you want to. But,
okay, well, could we limit it just to tree preservation?
Certainly. Also.
Dick, just change wording such that it relates to tree preservation, since planning is already working on the landscaping aspect of it.
One thing with planned residential, of course, is that if you wanted to, when you get the concept plan for the planned residential project, if you want to get into, you know, tree issues for attached housing or anything, any other tree issues in the planned residential project, you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Including buffers and
sure, anything. And all rather kinds of things. So that the plan director wouldn't even deal with it. I mean, it'd be a council decision.
It's part of the 25% green space also.
There's trade-offs with planned residential.
If you do delegate it to the planning director, you can't just say, hey, planning director, review this plan and tell us if it's okay. He's got to have some criteria to go by as to evaluate it. It can't be totally subjective, which this sounds like it would be.
So you need a statement added here as in commercial or whatever, something that's to the effect that if there's a project consisting of attached single-family duplexes or multifamily units, the preservation of grand trees might result in fewer dwelling units and or accessory buildings in the maximum.
Well,
line.
I mean, you'd have to back up to the existing wording, excuse me, that talks about you can't take down, no grand tree can be removed, no more than 80% of the inches of significant can be removed.
Is that what it is in those other zones?
That's what applies to commercial and multifamily today. You need something similar if you want the planning director to handle attached housing in planned residential also, some standards to go by. You can't just say, again, hey, planning director, what do you think? Review this for us.
Have you had problems with the standards in those other zones?
Not really, no. I mean, it gives you some, it's still subjective to some degree, but it gives you some standard to go by. It can't, you got to have something to give the staff direction on what you're looking for.
One of the things that would make sense, Mr. Mayor, from what you pointed out, is that if you do know that you're going to take these trees down and that the solution is to put more trees up, frankly, I'd rather spend money on landscaping than $10,000 figuring out over which tree that I'm not even going to touch. You see what I'm saying? I mean, this site I have is 5.5 acres, and there's trees everywhere. Well, the land survey means I got to go out and tag every one of those, even though I may not be touching very many of them. I don't want to touch them. So I guess what I'm saying is if you did have it to where you did submit the plan about which trees you're going to take out, and then he says, this is how many trees I want you to put back in or do something for the landscaping. To me, I'd rather do that than spend $10,000 citing every tree. I'd rather put it back in the trees. That's to me, that's what I would rather do. And I don't mind putting money in trees. I don't mind putting it in landscaping. I got to do it anyway. Can't get it through the homeowners unless I put my landscaping up.
So you feel if we added this paragraph to this ordinance, it would be workable?
Yeah, I wrote it.
Well, I was asking.
To be honest with you, I think if you have to put the
the area of trees, it probably works too. In other words, if Ed, if you're just concerned about we would submit what trees we're going to take out, and then we can submit how we're going to make it up and submit that to Ed and say, Ed, how do you want us to make this up? To me, that's different than requiring a tree survey everywhere, because it's going to cost $10,000 to do this, and I'm not even going to touch 75% of it, probably 90% of the trees.
The thing that I'm worried about is that if we don't pass something tonight for this attached housing thing, we're going to get some projects like that one that was suggested the other night at Design Review. And there's not going to be much that we can do except hope that the variance board won't let him build up to lot lines, et cetera, to keep that from happening. And Ed says that if he has a right to build so many units, that he needs this he needs additional wording in there, as in the other zones.
I think it probably should go back ahead to get the wording that
it
needs.
I think we're talking about two different things, two very different things here. You know what I mean?
Yes, ma'am. But I guarantee you that if it's worded as it is, those three projects would not have happened. Now, I'm not sure the one behind the mall, because I don't think there was any specimen trees there. I don't think this would have affected that one at all. Really wouldn't. If you're on a site that has no specimen trees, this ordinance does absolutely zero.
Yeah, okay.
It really doesn't. If it does have specimen trees, at least with Ed having the ability to say, all right, these are trees you're taking down, this is what I want you to replace them with and where, I can live with that. At least I don't have to survey. It's no different, really. I mean, that works. No, I just wouldn't have to submit what my landscaping plan is, because you know that he really wouldn't care about that. He'd just say, "What trees? How do we work replacement trees?"
Yeah. And, excuse me, Dick. Go ahead.
Procedurally, do you actually present a concept plan now in total for that unit of development that you're going to do? That comes to the plan.
To Ed?
To Ed.
We present the bottom of you. Tell me what we.
Roads and.
Well, for the concept plan for the PR, I mean, you know what that looks like. And then once that's approved, they give us pieces of a particular subdivision or whatever, and that's in greater detail.
That's what I'm asking. So you're going to get a sub-concept plan in greater detail for this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Will those areas where the units go, will those trees that have to go be identified? Mm-hmm. I mean, if there are,
well, we do. We will identify.
If there are specimen trees in that area, you will identify it. I suppose also you're going to say that, to the extent that you can, you're going to save them. But they will be identified, mm-hmm, in that plan that comes to the planning director.
That's, I guess, ridiculous.
Would there be?
If it's for detached single family, it's not going to be. And today, if it's for attached housing, it's not going to be. We're not going to get a plan showing
individual trees
are significant. It's not required.
I wonder if we could.
What I'm talking about is if with that ordinance, we would have to submit it. We'd have to submit the trees are going to be removed, and then also the trees that would be added.
And my point is, once that is submitted, what do we do with it? I mean, there's nothing that requires any trees to be saved in that project. Yeah, we got a survey, but the ordinance doesn't say that he's got to keep X number of trees or all grand trees or anything else.
But if the ordinance said you can tell me what trees to put where, it does. That's what you do. That's what you can do.
You're talking new landscaping. I'm talking different
existing trees.
Existing as opposed to new. I'm talking existing. What does the planning director do with that plan as far as requiring any existing trees to stay? There's got to be something in the ordinance saying, you know, all grand trees have to stay or something like that. Otherwise, there's no foundation for any staff decision.
So in this ordinance, if you have a grand tree, you can't take it down at all?
No.
Is that what it says?
No, I don't think.
Unless you can show an exception, it's an exception that would make the property undevelopable without saving the tree or without doing away with the tree.
But there's no alternative to taking it down, basically, is what it says. One comment on the tree survey to respond to what Pat said. There's flexibility in there that the planning director has in kind of tailoring the survey to the given site. If he's got, you know, 20 acres, and he's only building on five of those,
we can ignore the 15 that he's not touching and just do the survey of the part that counts. He doesn't have to automatically do a survey of all 20 acres, and that wording is in here now.
I'm not sure that word filters down to the survey that we're required to do. I think you're talking about the same thing here, Ed, really, to be honest with you. If the only question would be the grand trees. If I submit a plan to you and you don't like it because we're taking out a grand tree, you take it and you say it's disapproved.
But how does he know there's a grand tree there?
I would submit in that amendment. I have to designate the trees.
Okay, but you're following the.
Yeah, I mean, I'm submitting. The only thing I'm not doing is submitting it for the whole site, which I would just submit the ones that I'm going to take down, which is exactly what we do now.
Well, the your amendment down on Park Avenue that they're building the Charleston style, Aiken style homes. On. When they submitted that, they had all the trees pinpointed on that map. I mean, it was not required of them to do that, but they did. I mean, that was so nice to have in front of you, looking at the trees that are the existing trees, the ones that they plan to take out, and the ones that they plan to replace those with. I mean, that's, if we had that for the attached single family projects, the planned residential as well, to where they had to submit that. You can look at that program. Now, they didn't have to go out and pay $15,000 for a consulting firm to come in and do that tree survey. But these people just openly submitted it to us for review. That's all we would need in order to be able to look at this property and say this is approved or this is not approved. Now, if we have to have the stipulation in here that no grand trees can be touched unless the property is totally undevelopable without that, if we have to put in there that we would like to see the preservation of at least 20% of the inches maintained, we're able to do that, and maybe some areas that we couldn't do that in. But allow for that little bit of flexibility in there. Nobody on city council loves trees any more than I do. I hate to see one cut down. But I hate to see us burden somebody, a builder or contractor, with additional fees or additional charges when it's not necessary, I don't think.
And you also need to give staff a little bit of flexibility. I know, like on that particular development on Park Avenue, it came to me last Friday and said that one of the trees that they identified that they thought they're going to be able to save, it turns out that they're not going to be able to save it. So he looked at it, he had Tom Rapp look at it. But the way you had approved that ordinance, it gave that flexibility with staff that they could go ahead and work through those things with the developer. And so what Ed needs, what we come up with, is some percentage or some number that he's working off of. Otherwise, it's going to be very subjective from development to development as to what is he going to approve and how is he going to approve it. Number one, I think, Leslie, you brought the case with the PUD. If we exempt it, what will that do? The ideal thing with the PUD is, and I believe council is encouraging PUDs, planned residential, planned commercial, is that you could require anything you want within a PUD development. You might want to have larger buffers, smaller buffers. You might want to have certain design standards, certain changes in the roadways, even certain changes on the density. And you could work those things out, and the trade-off then would be that flexibility the developer has as to, as Pat mentioned, maybe on the trees. But any time a PUD comes in there, you're going to get 25% open space, and that's one of the trade-offs that we're looking for, is we want to have more open space or green space, whichever the case may be. So in all this, it's somewhat of a give and take. And all we ask is whatever give and take we have, that the staff has some flexibility, not a lot, but some flexibility to work through any minute detailing that might have to be done at the very last moment. If there's going to be some major redesigning, like with the villages that are going before the Planning Commission, that will have to come back for City Council again.
Okay. Can we go back to this original statement, Pat, that you came up with? And since planning is working on landscaping, take landscape out.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just call this second line, any duplex or greater units must submit a tree plan showing trees that are to be removed. And then skip landscaping plan with trees removed. The tree plan shall be submitted to the planning director or staff for approval, and then put in some of the same wording, if maybe exactly the same wording as in the commercial and the multifamily now, where you say no grand trees can be taken down, blah, 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 whatever else it says.
How does it go?
Because isn't what we're after here the same thing now that's in the commercial and the multifamily?
I think it would. If we can just designate that the trees removed and then fall back on the part that is required by the ordinance, I think that helps us. I think that's a cleaner way to do it. I think it also, there is some misconception out there, Ed, that, and maybe it's the surveyors are telling us this, that, you know, you got to do the whole thing because that's what they're telling you. And so if it's specific, to me, I think we've cleaned up and helped the ordinance. If it's specific to the trees removed and then submitted, as far as we know what the wording is, we know what we're supposed to do, to me, that helps clean it up.
It does say in this first paragraph, the changes that are recommended would not require an attached single-family residential project to comply with the requirements for new landscaping, but addresses tree preservation.
Right. Well, I was, to be honest with you, Jane, I was getting it to where we stepped over it to where we were in the landscaping because we do it anyway. I mean, but that's, if we just want to focus on the trees, that's fine.
Okay, can we stick to this a minute so we can come up with something and move on? What I said, and it's been said before, just take the landscaping part out and focus on the tree in this kind of wording, in this wording. But then, as Ed said, he needs some help there as to what the parameters are. Ed, would you restate what you stated a minute ago about commercial and multifamily? As it has to do with the tree?
I think I got one sentence in me. The standard to be applied in evaluating the submission is the same as for the others. That's really what you're getting to, I believe.
No.
That's where you're trying to hit. Now, where are you talking about putting this wording? I'm not sure.
On this planned residential suggestion that Pat had made, taking out the landscape plan per se, making it apply to trees, and then the criteria to be applied would be...
Oh, I understand. I just don't know where it's going in the tree. Chapter, but
would it go on removal of trees associated with development 4.6.4?
It would go in there somewhere in that.
Okay. Section.
Well, you could find a place for it.
Sure. Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
But it matters. It matters where it goes as far
right.
as the wording goes. And to answer your question, Mayor, if I understand it, the standard now for commercial and multifamily is that you can't remove any grand tree, basically, unless it is unavoidable. You have no choice, no alternative. You can't remove any more than 80% of the significant inches or inches of significant trees, unless it's unavoidable.
Is that what this current ordinance says?
Correct.
That's exactly what is being voted on tonight. What does this ordinance say?
Now, this would bring attached housing under that same standard.
Okay. All right. Is that a problem?
I'm talking about the original voting on the amendment. That was what they were voting on to bring it under the
correct.
This is a question. Does
everyone know about the fact that all I have to do is survey the trees they're going to remove? Is that common knowledge, or because every tree survey I've ever seen had them all? Do they
get that out?
The vast majority do, because the vast majority usually involve all of the lot. You know, it's usually an acre or two of a specific project, and it affects most of that lot. You don't get many where you've got 10 acres, but they're only dealing with two of that 10 acres. So
It's the exception that you have somebody not affecting the whole.
That's the thing that is different on what we do, and I think what Gall and Kisner do. It's not, we're not trying to cram everything into this, which is part of the problem they've got. And I understand why we're here, is the fact that if you look at the things that we're talking about, you have to survey it there, because you're putting houses on 80% of the lot or 70% of the lot. So from that standpoint, it does help us to have it delineated where we just want to see where, and if we can, if there's a significant tree, we're going to move it. We'll try to move it slightly, you know, to where we try to save the trees.
But you have the flexibility, and now to do that, right? You can define the study area required.
Correct.
It's just going to cause me to write checks to the city if I got
Pat, what we've just been talking about, though, and Ed, is that satisfactory now? Is that the best we can do right now?
Well, again, I'm the type of guy that's, I got to see it in black and white before I fully understand it. It's hard for me just to hear this and tell you for certain it's going to work. It sounds like it will, but
I don't think we'll give up anything except the fact we could find more.
But we don't know for certain whether a lot of things are going to work. We just do the best we can to try to make workable proposals. And we clearly have a situation with R6 that is not working. You know, that's, and I think that's what this is addressing more than it's trying to demand tree surveys of everybody all over the place for hundreds
of people. Well, this would take out the tree of survey, which is you're talking about, and it would put it more in the language, using the language that we already have in commercial and multifamily.
Mr. Mayor, I think Ed has indicated that the changes would possibly go into 4.6.4, the removal of trees associated with development, where in that paragraph that is there, he's not certain, but certainly inserting it in that area, I think he's saying would...
I don't think we need to worry about exactly where it goes. We need the wording, right?
If I may, it needs to... We need to pretty clearly delineate where you want it to be. If you're going to modify the language that's before you tonight, I think you need to be
specific.
Pretty specific on where this language is going to go.
Okay. Well, let's get specific then. I think we need something tonight on this ordinance. I think we probably all agree to that. If not, I haven't heard anybody say we don't.
I mean, if I could offer a suggestion, would you, sure. do you foresee a problem with passing the ordinance as it's presented to you tonight and then having Ed take the proposed amendment back to the Planning Commission and let them look at it?
Actually, is Pat still here? I hope he does.
Okay. Yeah.
What I'm hearing, we're really back to, it seems to me, that what you've really gotten was a clarification of the application of the ordinance as proposed tonight.
As long as that's what it is, because I was...
You had a different idea when you came here.
Well, what I want to make sure of is when I read it, that's exactly what we said. In other words, that you just have to survey what is there, and if it is a significant, then I'll, and if I can move it, and I just have to do my survey where the pad is and what trees I'm removing,
then you have no problem.
And then, but I also want to make sure about that there isn't something here that I've missed in the ordinance too, from that standpoint. So, you know,
I think I'm all right with it.
Mr. Mayor,
yes, it is. Yeah.
I think our attorney has proposed a worthwhile recommendation. In addition to that, I think we should understand what Ed is saying in terms of him not seeing this black and white and feeling very uncomfortable and supporting something that he has not personally seen. With that, Mr. Mayor, I am moving that we adopt this ordinance on second reading as is.
Let's see.
No, I haven't had a chance to speak.
I'm sorry.
You actually already have a motion.
Sorry.
I believe
we're still in public hearing.
No,
you're
on.
I apologize.
We don't have motions yet. Okay. Who would like to speak?
A gentleman.
Okay. Tom.
Tom.
Good evening. Todd Still, owner of Envirescape, landscaping company for the past 20-25 years. I think I've been in here and sat on various committees ever since the original landscape ordinance was taken in. And, you know, one of the things I'm sitting back here, I'm hearing, is y'all talking about something that's going to be written down in paper and given to people to read. At some point in time, it comes to me to actually implement. I have to sit there and go out there and work with the people doing the tree surveys. We have to sit there and actually somehow, you know, the developer, the landowner, whoever's working with it, and also the person who wants to sell the land, how they're going to interpret, how they're going to work with it. And I think, as Ed has mentioned, and is it is very subjective. The reality of actually creating something, and I think the subjective part of it falls down at this point in time. I think this is one of the main reasons I'm here, is it comes down to, in essence, one person, the city horticulturist, and then at some point in time, if he's not quite sure what to do, then he reverts it over to Ed as a city planner. I myself have had a problem with the system on probably more than one occasion. One particular instance, we had two other arborists come in and review a situation on a particular tree, at which point in time, you know, their opinion was totally different of that of Tom Rapp's, the existing arborist at that point in time. So I think, once again, you know, I'm here to sit there and have a quality of trees in Aiken in maybe 50, 100, 150 years from now. Jane, you mentioned we got to do something now. I sat in the room next door probably about 12, 15 years ago, and somebody said, well, we just need to do something to prevent, I think the quote was, you know, to make another jump that they have to jump over, even if it's not right or wrong, we need to sit there and slow them down. I think we have the opportunity. Let's make sure something is done correctly. We all know exactly how big a tree is. Pat says we got to cut some down, we'll just add more, we'll add more. Well, you go down and cut one of those trees down south boundary, what are you going to do, add 20 more for the one big tree you cut down? You know, where are you going to put them? You know, it's common knowledge that a lot of these trees, we know how big they're going to get, we know how much span they're going to need, and even given that, we're still forced to put too much in too many places. So one of the things that we run into, especially when we're working with different clients, what do we have to do just to get by? So it's kind of, I'm hearing a little bit of that. What do we got to do tonight from y'all to sit there and create something that will help solve that problem? And once again, I revert back to the, I'm not quite sure what it is, by Harvard's or the Goodwill, behind, next to Applebee's, that subdivision right over there, I mean that shopping plaza that was put in there. I think, I can't remember exactly how it happened, I just remember seeing it. And, you know, they sat there and regraded that whole site to save about six trees. Well, none of them are alive today. You know, had they been, you know, forced to put some trees in, you know, smaller trees, and like some white oaks or something, if they put six white oaks in there when they did that job originally, you know, 200 or 300 years from now, those trees would still be there today. I mean, in 200 or 300 years from now.
What do you think would be a reasonable, you know, I just don't want to see these lots cleared and us lose.
I agree 100%. You know, I mean, I make a living by saving trees.
I know,
trees.
You've done this a long time.
And one of the things that we have to do is, y'all creating something on paper just to see it today. When we go out there and we're hired to look at something, we have to envision that 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. So when we put that one tree, we got to make sure that tree doesn't grow into the house. You know, a lot of things that y'all deal with is a footprint of a building, bricks, mortar. I mean, that's cut and dry. That's not going to change. I mean, this is like any one of you having a child that's 2 or 3 years old and deciding what kind of shoe and what size they're going to wear when they're 21 years old. So, and a lot of factors are taken into that. As far as clear-cutting land, you know, my parents lived over in Camden Hills. They had, for 25, 30 years, the Wilders, Judge Wilder, lived behind them. And someone bought the land, and they cut down every single tree, every blade of grass, everything, on the back two-thirds of that property. You know, it's in residential. Yeah, I've seen the part over there crossing the prep school. I don't know. I think the main thing is whatever you come up with, what I'm saying is let's make sure that we just don't have people doing something, be doing it. But I'd rather see someone put six trees down, give them the space to grow to maturity, and they'll be here 300 or 400 years. You know, Mr. Dibble had the insight when they planted all those live oaks. you know, he spaced them. He gave them the space to grow. And they're there today, and we get to enjoy that. Had that been planted with a bunch of Bradford pears and river birches or, you know, something else, you know, their longevity. Once again, we also know the trees are only going to live so long. So I think the main thing I'm proposing is some sort of quality of longevity. And also, I think I've stated this more than once, I believe, I know it's kind of burdensome in another committee or whatever, but I think there needs to be some sort of committee that's made up of maybe some other arborists, maybe somebody who's in the tree business, maybe someone's in landscaping, maybe some, you know, master gardeners, but there has to be a group that can look at some things. Nothing against Ed or Tom Rapp, but that's two opinions who can control every bit of landscaping in the city of Aiken. I think one time I pulled up the existing landscape tree ordinance, it had Tom Rapp was in position to make 40 decisions. There's 40 times it reverted back to him making that decision. So it's almost like he's been anointed as being God when it comes to trees. And, you know, I myself, I'm in the business. I'm entitled to my opinion. Tom's entitled to his. But it's, you know, when you're sitting there saying this is a significant tree, and you got two arborists says it's damaged, it might not live, yet Tom says it is, that's a pretty big thing. And I think, you know, if you got to sit there and have some other avenue to be able, at least be able to sit there and have that discussion where a few people sit back in the panel and look at that with some other information. And as far as someone coming clearing the land, I'll let you all solve that part.
Well, that's what we're trying to solve. It's not an effort to put, I mean, Ed doesn't need any more regulations, I can tell you that. But we've just had this big problem with this detached housing zone. It seems more prevalent in that R6 zone than in anything else we deal with. And now that downtown, particularly downtown property, is getting so expensive, there's more and more of an inclination to build right up to lot lines, build on as many square feet as possible. You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think that's all in the world this was an effort to address.
I had a client hire me today, and we're going in, and we're looking at 1,000 acres.
See,
and we are picking and choosing which trees not to cut down. And normally what we do is we tell people everything that's dead, dying, and broken, that comes out, and then we make the decision on the next batch.
So before anything's built, I mean, whoever's doing the building's got some kind of plan about trees. They have to.
Well, I think so, and I think if there's a specimen tree, if there's a tree there, one of the things we try to do is we try to educate people when they go clear a lot, if it's just for, I'll use a residential lot, you know, I always tell them, add an extra $1,000. Pay me $500 to come in and help qualify which trees might you be able to save. And you have to pay the guy clearing the land to come back a second day to take out the couple that we had to think about, other than just going in and clearing them all out. You know, if you can save one or two trees, you know, that could be $2,000-$4,000 if you were to sit there and come back and plant them in there. So it's a lot cheaper and a lot, you know, better to keep a tree. But sometimes, you know, you've got to cut down a whole bunch of trees. We're working on another track right now, and we're going to take out probably 80% of the trees along the roadside. However, what we're going to do is we're only going to take out about 50% this year. As the other ones mature, then we're going to go back in and take out the remainder in the next 2 or 3 years. But each one of those trees needs more space as they grow. An example of that is, I don't know if y'all have seen like a pecan orchard. You know, and when they plant pecan trees, they might plant 100. And then after a couple of years, they might go out and take out 20% of them, the ones that live. And then they might go back a few more years and take out a few more to make sure that they gave room for all the ones to really to grow to maturity.
Todd, if I understand, you're not really addressing this. You're addressing the oversight of the overall ordinance.
I'm addressing when you get done doing this, and I'll probably deal with clients, and then we're going to have to go in there. And sometimes I have a problem when you're trying to put trees in. If there's nowhere to put them, there's nowhere to put them. Now, granted, I know we have the thing where we can sit there and take them and put that into the tree bank. I think I was part of that committee that came with that. But at the same time, I guess one of the main issues that I'm concerned about is when you've got, it's subjective, what is a grand tree? You know, what's a buffer zone? What belongs in the buffer zone? and, you know, just to be keeping things, to be keeping them. Or the other part I think needs to be looked at this point in time is if, you know, a developer, someone's just having to do something to get by, then there's no quality.
Todd, you raised some good issues tonight for all of us to think about, because you're correct in saying that we sit here and we listen and we go on our feelings in terms of what we feel are grand, significant, and really not thinking, personally, not thinking what you encounter based on your work every day with developers. I don't believe in replacing tree for tree, simply because the development itself, the unit itself takes up a certain amount of space, so there's no way to go in to replace something tree for tree when you've already probably used up a good portion of the land. But as was stated, what was being asked, if possible, funds would go into a tree fund to replace trees other places within the city, not necessarily on that lot. But I just want to comment, you have raised some interesting issues tonight.
Okay, thank you, Todd. I want to go back to Ed again now. Again, let's go back to this wording here. Unless somebody else has some other wording. Planned residential zoning PUD shall be exempt from the tree survey ordinance. Okay, period. However, any duplex or greater units must submit a plan showing trees that are to be removed and or added. The landscape plan shall be submitted to the planning director or staff for approval.
So you're taking out landscape.
And then we would have the criterion in which you would look at would be the same as a commercial and multifamily. And my question is, what's wrong with that?
If you use that language, it doesn't identify the grand or significant trees, and the purpose of the ordinance is to preserve grand and significant trees.
I thought
trees.
That it did have the grand trees in that, in the commercial and the multifamily.
Well, but if we talk about
grand trees,
if planned residential is exempt from the tree survey ordinance, then you don't get a tree survey, and you don't know which trees are grand or significant. That's how I understand that language to be.
I also thought that we had arrived at the conclusion that we don't need the BAP amendment at this point.
Yes. All right, let's hear this some more. Something else said.
Well, we don't need it at this point because he got clarified the question of the amount of land that needs to be studied. Isn't that?
As long as that's what it is, I think that's a Todd saying. He gets out there and all of a sudden someone says, this is grand free and this is perfect.
Hey, Pat, come on up to the mic if you would, please.
So it's a different issue.
As long as I know that I'm just surveying what I'm taking out, and as long as that's what Ed's saying, and if it is a grand tree, I'm going to try to save a grand tree as well. But I mean, what I'm saying is, with that ordinance, he gets to say whether it's approved or not. If it's a grand tree, and he says you got to save the grand tree, that's all that amendments. I was just trying to keep where I was going to survey the exact plot, and as long as Ed says I can do that. That's what I plan to do, and then adhere to the ordinance.
Is this area around a specific let's say housing unit? Is this called the common area, Ed? Is that what's known as the common area? And what I'm reading here,
when you have a particular development, say of attached housing, it could be cut up into individual lots. You know, one lot for each dwelling unit, with individual owners for those lots, and the remainder of that property is commonly owned by a homeowners association.
Okay.
Typically.
Okay. So, okay, let's get back then. Pat says as long as he has to look at that one area that where he's going to be building, how do you define that area?
Well, usually
so that he'll know what he has to list.
It's not just me.
Well, I know it'd be everybody, but let's talk about
the ordinance refers to a disturbed area, and that's just the area.
A disturbed area. Okay.
The ground's going to be scraped up, dirt moved, but everything else we can, you know, work around.
I mean, so I think we can deal with what Pat's talking about.
Within the language of this ordinance?
Within the existing language.
We'll be here. Again, council has to realize that whatever changes are made today, if this is not workable in the future, we can always go back and make sure. Other changes.
Sure.
But this is, you know, this is a start. We may find there's going to have to be other changes in the future based on how this works out.
Okay.
I think if you read, I made a motion that
Wait, just a minute. Is anyone else who wants to speak on this issue? We're still in the public hearing aspect.
I'm Rosamond McDuffie Aiken. I thank you for dealing with this so long, but it is necessary, please, with the restrictions that they be definite and that you put some teeth into this thing, that it is to start immediately. You're the guiding forces here. Give it to them. I mean, the developers will find a way. They'll come back to you, and then you can do. But I think what you are, Fred, what you read, that it probably is the best solution now. We are the America City, aren't we? Doesn't that include the trees and everything that makes us so grand?
Absolutely.
Come on. You've hassled with this long enough. Let's make it restrictive and see if it doesn't work. I think it will. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rosman. Okay, anyone else would like to speak? If not, it's back. Okay, John.
My name is John Brecht. I live at 743 Chafee Lane. I agree with Rosman, and let's have plain, simple, strong tree ordinance that is enforceable. It's really simple. I am a tax-paying, voting citizen. I don't care about developers. I just care about my neighborhood and the city. So that's all I'm asking. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, John. Anyone else? Okay.
My name's Ann Bliss. I'm John's wife. I also live in the city, but my concern is we have downtown has become really popular. There's a lot of vacant lots that people own or are selling, and there's a lot of big trees. A lot of them are surrounding the lots. They're not within the lot property. Some of them are within the lot property. People are coming and buying buying the property and building a house. They're building a house way oversized for the property, in my opinion. And in doing that, they have to remove all the trees. It changes the whole character of the downtown. One thing that's really gorgeous about this downtown are these beautiful trees. I always tell my friends, I moved here from the city years ago. I say I live in the country. Now, anyone that lives here knows that this isn't the country, this is downtown. But to me, I feel like I live in the country. I got raccoons, I have a fox running through my yard. Once these trees go, a lot of this is going to go too, and it's a shame. It also is great for pollution, it's great for sound, it's great for privacy. It just adds so much character, and the idea that someone can come in because it will make it easier for a contractor, which it will. Hell, if I was a contractor, yeah, bulldoze the thing down and replant, and we can have planned development. But that doesn't do anything to add character. I mean, these gorgeous old trees, you can't grow those in my lifetime. I want to be able to see them. I want my kids to see them. I don't want them there. 100 years from now. I mean, I do, but you know what I'm saying. As Jane says, you know what I'm saying.
You don't want to wait 100 years, do you?
Okay, and that's my spiel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you. Anyone else? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, my motion was to adopt this ordinance on second reading as presented to Council. I since the pad has gotten some clarification, and if there are any modifications to be made, they can be amended at another meeting, but the motion is to adopt it as is.
Okay.
I second it.
Okay. Any comments, discussion?
So the amendment about the same criteria is applied to?
The whole thing is gone.
Just go, just by this.
That's fine.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, all in favor? Show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Very good. Thank each of you for your comments and what have you. Appreciate it. Under new business, item one, first reading of an ordinance accepting the fiscal year 2004-05 audited financial statements. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance accepting the fiscal year 2004-2005 audited financial statements and authorizing the variances to the fiscal year 2004-2005 budget ordinance. At our work session today, we heard from Elliott Davis Company, Lori Smith. I do want to echo the comments the council made. Our staff really works hard. Nita Lilly and her staff, anytime we have a new auditor, there's a little bit of fear and trepidation that we all go through, not knowing what requirements we may have. And this was just a tremendous working relationship. And we feel that there was a good change that we made. And we're presenting this audit to you and the variances that have been made within the ordinance, budget ordinance, for you to accept tonight. And then at the next meeting, we'd have second reading and public hearing on the subject at hand.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I move for adoption of this ordinance as that relates to city staff.
Okay.
I'll second.
Second? Any discussion? As we said earlier in the work session, it was a very good audit. Nothing found out of order. And because of the work of our staff, we have the highest bond ratings that a city our size can have. And so we're all proud of that. Show of hands, please, all in favor, accepting this audit. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 2, the first reading of an ordinance setting the date for a special referendum. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance calling a referendum pursuant to the South Carolina Code Section 51-31-620 and 51-31-660 on the question of whether the City of Aiken should purchase the Gem Lake sewer system from UUC. When I originally talked to council about this, I believe it was in the last meeting in November, and we annexed the property, we were hoping on having a referendum no later than the first part of February. We met shortly thereafter with Richard Johnson, with our election commission, and we called up the county and actually set a date for February 14th. And we're ready to roll forward with that. And then we used the good judgment. I was going to first say we made the mistake, but we used the good judgment of contacting another attorney who had been involved in special elections for us in the past, and that was Jim Holly. And Jim Holly stated that you really need to have that referendum question be presented to the Department of Justice to make sure that they agree with the question we have at hand, or there could be a possible challenge at some point in time. So once we set the date and we have that question that's going to be presented on that date, which states, shall the City of Aiken purchase the sewer system currently operated by United Utility Company, Incorporated, that serves the residents of Gem Lakes Estate Subdivision, who will fully repay the city for this purchase? That will be the actual question that will be on the ballot. They will look at that. They'll have also time then to review the annexation, which takes 60 days. So 60 days from the time that you pass this on second reading brings us to near the end of March. So unfortunately, even though we'd like to have the election on an earlier date, the earliest we felt that we could meet all of our obligations for the Department of Justice would be to schedule this on March 28th, 2006. Once council... Once that, assuming that citizens affirm this, it would then come back to City Council for you to go ahead and ratify the approval.
and where the money would come from to purchase this, and then sometime in the month of April we'd go ahead and have a closing to purchase the system itself. So before you tonight is the consideration and first reading of an ordinance calling for a referendum concerning the purchase of the Gem Lake sewer system for March 28th, with the question that we have up above in the ordinance itself, and that at the next meeting we'll have second reading and public hearing to schedule this election.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I'll second it. Any discussion? Pardon me. If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously.
And by the way, that is on a Tuesday.
Yes. Oh, good. Item 3, report on review of the city manager. Good, I get to do this. After our last city council meeting 2 weeks ago, we went into executive session to talk about a personnel matter, and as we do each year, discuss the city manager's performance and evaluated that. And we, to a person, we expressed our appreciation for Roger for all the many good things he's done for our city and his leadership. And it can be numbered, you know, it would take an hour or so to talk about each and everything. But it's very evident that we have a wonderful city, and a big part of that certainly is the leadership of our city manager, who is responsible on a day-to-day basis for everything that goes on in the city. That's his job. All their employees report to him, and he's responsible for them. And I know for a fact that Roger works anywhere from 50 to 6 hours a week, and maybe sometimes even more. So it wasn't a question of telling him he wasn't doing a good job. He's doing a very good job, to excellent, in our opinions, from that meeting. And there were some little things talked about, but most everything was very, very positive. I had the little things, I guess, the itty-bitty detailed things. But as a result of that meeting, we also, while we were in that meeting, of course, we looked at some other cities that we always look at as a survey, not only for city manager, but for council as well. Although we don't make any changes when it comes to council, that's been the history lately. But when you look at these cities, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and there's cities, Orangeburg, Beaufort, Goose Creek, Rock Hill, Hilton Head, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, North Augusta, Spartanburg, and you look at the salaries of the city manager, it averages $126,198 per year. It's $126,198. Roger is currently earning $115,898. Now, in my opinion, when you look at those cities, Aiken is right at the top of those cities, if not number one, they're number two, no lower than number three. And certainly it was a feeling of the council when we sat and talked about this that certainly he deserved a nice raise, not only nice, but one that eventually would get him up to at least average. Now, I don't know that anybody could say that the city of Aiken's average or Roger's average. He's not average. He's well above average. And so we talked about a lot of percentages, and what I want to do now is to propose and make a motion that we give Roger a 5% salary increase effective December 10th, which is 2 days past. And that would bring his salary up to $121,693. Now keep in mind that the average is still $126,000, so it's still below average. But then we would look again at the first of the year when we submit our budget, which would go into effect July 1st, with the thought in mind of increasing it again to a point where he would be at least average. And I think that there's no less we can do about that. But at least at this point in time, I'm recommending, and I'll make a motion to this effect, that we increase our city manager's salary by 5% from $115,898 to $121,693. And so that would be my motion. And if there are any questions, I'd be glad to take questions about this. Yes, sir.
Would you like a second on your motion, Mr. Mayor, before the
question? Yes. Do we have a second?
Yes, I'll second it.
Okay, I made a motion and a second. Yes, sir.
My name is Bruce Haldorf, and I sat down with Mr. LeDuc about 9 years ago because I requested that I'd like to have my street cleaned in front of my office. My office is located between the family pharmacy and what used to be formerly the med center, but now is Dr. Bryant's office. He's an OBGYN on Newberry Street. Well, yesterday I had to, or rather this morning, I had to go to work an hour early to clean the city street. And I've had to clean the city street now for 9 years. I'm doing the city's job. He said it was too difficult to change the route of the street cleaner. It goes up and down Lawrence Street every single day. The street cleaner comes down Newberry Street once a month. That's not good enough. I pay a lot of taxes in this town. I pay a lot of business license. I saw we're in the big book there. 4,300,000 on business licenses. I think I might, seek legal counsel and maybe pay 1/30th of my business license this year, because that's what I think Roger LeDuc deserves. I'm sorry, but I don't think he's done a good job.
Okay, thank you, sir, for your comment. I'm sorry, what?
Did we get his name?
Dr. Haldorf. Before we even named Roger city manager, and I worked with him even before then, I do not recall a single complaint, nor do I recall you talking to me or maybe either any of the other council members. And I haven't had a single complaint about Roger until tonight, since I've been working with him as a city manager. Now, none of us are perfect. I'm certainly not perfect. I make mistakes all the time. But we will certainly look at the schedule and see what we can do, Dr. Haldorf, as you walk out the door. Okay. Okay. You do what you think is best. That's your prerogative. Okay. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, may I have a comment?
Yes, you may. Certainly.
On Friday, this past week, the Region 4 Director of HUD, Bob Young, was in town. Bob Young was here personally to make a presentation at Lawrence Nevada Council of Government regarding funds available for faith-based and whatever institutions desire that. But he also wanted to see our city and what we had done in the area of housing. And Roger didn't have time, and you had some commitments, so Lisa Segura and Ivory Williams, I believe is her married name, took the former mayor of Augusta on tour of Aiken to show him what had been done, but principally we were looking for funds to do other things in this town. As we drove through neighborhood after neighborhood, several citizens said, show me your real bad areas, your bad areas. And we drove through these areas and said, well, this is not what I consider blighted. There are a few pockets of things that need help, but it's not what I'm looking for, what I see in other communities. And he gave us raving reviews for what we have done to our city. He said that we've set ourselves apart from other communities and where we have come in the short span that we have been working with our community. And I can say that we have Roger, with his leadership and council, all to say thanks to. Because had it not been for a vision and us supporting that vision, we wouldn't have someone to come in and say, at his level, what a great community we have from an outside opinion. We did find some things that he could fund for us, so we didn't leave him with nothing. But nevertheless, he left here with some outstanding remarks about our community.
I have to say, too, that every time someone's had a question that I had no answer for, which is frequently because I don't know the workings of all city government, I've been heartened that the city manager has asked that people call him directly. I think this is a great way to handle situations. I know he doesn't always, often he has to direct the call to someone else, but that's fine with me. I did want to ask you, when's the last time you had a complaint from this gentleman?
I don't remember it from 9 years ago, but if he says I talked to him 9 years ago, I believe him. And again, it's a city policy that we sweep the downtown on a regular basis. We sweep the main areas like Lawrence and Whiskey Road once a week, and we try to get all the streets once a month. And if council wants to have more street sweepers and more, you know, the street sweeper costs us about $120,000 now, and then we're out about every 3 years, we could do that.
But I'll bet you if he had talked to one of his representatives.
But the answer was still from the same.
Or an at-large representative. I haven't heard from him either. Yeah. That we could have directed some help that way.
We were still done it once a month. In other words, we're not going to sweep it any more often his area than any other area unless we're going to change our policy on the amount we sweep streets in other neighborhoods.
What we do personally is go out and sweep our own curbing because we take pride in what our home looks like in front of it. Recognizing that there's not going to be a street sweeper there every 2 weeks to sweep it.
So. You weren't city manager 9 years ago either, were you?
No, I wasn't. It might have been the other city manager you talked to. I don't remember.
Blame it on Steve Thompson.
Well, I should put in one little word. Roger, I had found over the 4 years to be extremely helpful and very, very hardworking and very knowledgeable about our city. And a lot of the good that goes on here, Roger gets 98.2% of the credit for the leadership he provides in it. And just a few weeks ago, I mentioned the idea that we really ought to have our meeting minutes online. And by golly, they're there. Thank you, Roger.
Let me not go without saying how much I appreciate your hard work. And I live in a tough district. And
TIF district?
Tough district, I think. And I do want to say that when people call and I say, call Mr. LaDuke, that's a lot for you to take on, because I don't know many high schools whose principals will say call the principal without first going through maybe two or three other people. But you do take those calls, and you are willing to talk to people and to work out problems. You work so effectively with your department. department heads, and I feel that you're very supportive, and I think it shows in the quality of the work that we get from them. And so I, too, want to go on record as supporting your efforts and saying that if all you get is one complaint since you've been city manager and the complaint actually belongs to someone who preceded you, I think you're doing pretty good. I'll take your record any day.
Me too. I don't
Mr. Mayor,
yes, go ahead,
please. I've only been in this position for a short time, but I'd also like to take my hat off to Roger. He's been very supportive of me in helping me get up to speed as far as the issues that goes on within our city. I'd also like to say that as far as I'm concerned, our city is second to none, and I think that's due directly to the leadership that we've had from our mayor and from Roger Ledoux. So, Roger, I'd just like to thank you for what you've done.
I want to say I don't know that anybody gives Roger more little detailed questions and that kind of thing than I do. It seems because I know this because he talks to my wife about it. He says, "What's wrong with Fred?"
She wasn't supposed to say those things.
And she told me. But really, so many of them are little incidental kind of things, and he takes care of every one of them. So that's the whole point of the whole thing. Okay, unless there are any other comments, we've got a motion.
I'd like to make one comment. You said a lot of wonderful things, but an individual is only as good as the people he works with. Direction from council has been great, but you see a row of individuals way in the back out there that if it wasn't for each one of those individuals day in and day out, Larry, Anita, Ed, Bill, Glenn, Richard, Pete, Kenny Cook, who's not here, Sarah Rideout, you wouldn't have the city we have today. It is those individuals that they and their staffs day in and day out really presents the foot forward that you all see and gets the job done. And I lean on them heavily, and they'll admit I lean on them heavily. And they put in a lot of hard work and a lot of effort, and I just thank them for everything they do for the city of Aiken.
Absolutely.
You're here.
And our volunteer committees, which we couldn't do without either. Okay, show hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Under petitions, first item, purchase of a lot at Richland and York Street. Mr. Ledoux, please.
You have in your package here a letter from Aiken Corporation from Wade Brody. Some of you probably have realized, because they might have come to you individually, asking for some money to help support the purchase of the lot at Richland, New York. About 1 year ago, you came to City Council and you had voted, it was a 4-3 vote, and had authorized $225,000 to go towards the possible purchase of that lot. When we went to the owner of the property, they said no, that was not enough, they wouldn't take anything less than $260,000. At that point, Mike Anticlerio from Aiken Corporation started trying to raise funds to make up the difference, hoping that he could get that $35,000. Done a yeoman's job and was able to get $20,000, and they would like to come back to council saying, since they have raised $20,000, would council raise that amount up to $240,000 tonight to purchase the lot at York and Richland? Now, there's been a lot of discussion as to what would be done with that lot. I'm not here today to tell you exactly what would be done with that lot, but most of it would be as open space. There'd be certainly some street furniture in there, probably a fountain. Certainly there'd be some shrubbery, some trees in there. If we could work it out, I'd love to work out plans with the church that adjoins it, that property, where they're putting up the Life Center right now, to get some of their property and possibly some of this property to put some parking along the border of those that could be used jointly by the church and by others that would need to park in that area. But before tonight is a request by Aiken Corporation asking council to authorize $240,000 for this lot. And then if you did this, you would need to pass this in a form of approval or resolution stating where the money would come from for this purchase.
Let's talk about where the money would come from.
What you had discussed in the past is we do have money set aside in the once-in sales tax. The way the ordinance read, I read it this morning, let's get the wording, it could be used for the construction of parks, open space, and greenways within and around the city of Aiken, and $1 million was set up for that. Specifically, when we talked about setting aside that $1 million, this lot came up on more than one occasion as to possibly using that money. So I would suggest that if you do decide to purchase this lot, that the majority, if not all, the money would come from that account.
Okay.
And saying that, let me just say this one step further. We are going to be coming to you either at Horizons or in around that time period with a plan of action for setting up a method or priority for developing easements and greenways in and around the city, specifically looking at areas that would protect our watershed. And so we'll be coming to you with an overall plan so that you know where the money and how the money should be prioritized in the future from that account.
Okay, very good. Is anyone in the audience would like to speak on this issue one way or the other? Well, first of all, let's have a motion in a second. I move that we support this project and put forth the additional money, $15,000, to bring it up to $240,000, and purchase this lot. And I do that because I really think it's a prime property. It's right on that intersection that is so beautiful, entrance to our city, and I think we need to manage it to have control of it and do what we really want to do with it rather than let it get in the hands of who knows who. So that's why I make my motion to do that.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to second that, but I'd also like to say that I did attend the National League of Cities, and I went to the smart growth tour of several small towns right outside of Charlotte in Mecklenburg County. And I saw some beautiful parks there that I did bring some pictures back and did order a CD. I'd like for some of you to take a look at that, because it is a prime example of something that you could do in a spot like this. It's large enough, and it would make a beautiful addition to the entrance into downtown. And so I would like to second that with the idea that we could look at some really nice ways to beautify that area.
Okay. Does anyone who would like to speak on the subject? You may do so. Pardon me.
Ed Gioli, 531 Greece Avenue, Aiken. I just have one question. Has an appraisal been made of the property, and who presently owns the property?
Has an appraisal been made?
Yes.
I thought there was, but it's been a year since I really looked to see. But I Mike, do you remember? You're the one that was working on this.
Bruce Snipes owns the property, and he quoted $260,000, but I've been told with the appraisal on it.
He bought it for $260,000?
No.
He wants
$260,000.
He's come to $260,000.
Well, yeah, I don't believe that we have done an appraisal of the property.
We were told that there was an appraisal done of the property a year or two ago.
Right.
And I think it was $285 or something.
An appraisal was done, and that is why we agreed. We would not have agreed to support whatever amount we supported without that appraisal done.
$260
Yeah.
And I thought, no, I think the original appraisal was even higher than that.
It was higher.
It may have been.
It was higher than that. I think you're right.
But the owner said that he would sell it for $260
But, my problem with it then, I think actually when we passed it a year ago, we really compromised and said, okay, let's make an offer of $225,000 Now, he's still stuck at $260 and to me, it's a prime property, but if it's a prime property, it's been on the market for another year by one of the top salespeople in the county, and it still hasn't sold at that price. So that's my problem with this kind of raising the offer again. I just don't understand it. If he wants to sell it, why doesn't he really negotiate? Because he hasn't really negotiated very much. I'm still bothered. You've gone out and raised money, and we're kind of sweetening the pot with that. And I don't understand how this contract of purchase would be written when we got 20,000 come. Has anybody sort of thought through that? Who actually makes the purchase?
If you went ahead and approved this tonight, it would be the city of Aiken that would be making the purchase for it. So it would be in our hands, not Aiken Corporation's hands.
And what is the contract going to read? $240
Well, I would assume that Aiken Corporation would be donating that money to the city of Aiken and would then use that again if you approve the $240 and make an offer of $260,000.
You know, we're sitting here talking just earlier tonight about maintaining trees and green space within our city, and I think this is a prime opportunity that we can let our views be known as far as if we would like to maintain that. I think this would be a beautiful area coming into our city, mm-hmm. off of York Street. Visitors coming into our city would be able to see that. I think it would be very attractive. You and I have just sat around here tonight and discussed the properties within the downtown area and how quickly they're being grabbed up by people. I think we should move on this tonight. The Aiken Corporation, in good faith, has raised $20,000 to try to reach that compromise, and I think we should go ahead and do it.
I think one of the other things that is on my mind is when Wesley United Methodist Church was contemplating building, grazing the current church and building a new structure, and they were pretty much talked into preserving what was there and putting up a reception building that is similar to what's already there. And I think some of those individuals that work with historical preservation work with them, and I think this would be a wonderful addition to what they're trying to do next door at the church and for that corner in Aiken. I think most people who are in the business of buying properties and building structures in Aiken have probably recognized the fact that what we want to do here is a natural fit for that area, and that's probably one of the reasons why they have not moved to purchase the property over the objections to those who would like to keep it green space. I think there is some heart there that drives the non-sale of that property, waiting to see if they could come up with the wherewithal to purchase that property and keep it green space. And I think we would be remiss if we did not go along with making this and keeping this green space. It's diagonally across from the Chamber of Commerce, and I think it's a really neat place to have nice trees and park benches and just whatever there.
Where?
Mm-hmm. excuse me, Wade Brody, chairman of the Aiken Corporation. We started working on this project about 2 years ago. It grew out of the Aiken Downtown Development Association. Since council looked at it and made a decision, made an offer on the property, we have stayed in touch with the owners constantly, expressing our desire to see that property used as a park. Could have had some effect on whether or not it was the sale of the property. That corner, in my mind, is the most historic corner in the city of Aiken. On the west side across the street, you have First Baptist Church that just celebrated its 200th year. On the north side, adjoining the property, you have the Emanuel Institute that's being developed as an African-American cultural center. And on the east side, Wesley United Methodist Church, that's a very historic structure. As Roger mentioned, there would be a desire to work something out with the church on maybe donating some property. If the city purchases the property, we have a verbal agreement with the church that they will donate some property for parking. So I would encourage you to purchase the property. Thank you.
How large is the property? How large is it? What size is it?
The donation?
No, the land. How much land is there?
I'm not sure what the square footage is.
Wait, I have a big problem when we are spending, considering voting to spend almost $250,000. We don't have a real plan that we can look at for this, and I don't see why we can't do that. I mean, part parking and part green space, and we have in that 1% sales tax, green space was defined, and there needs to be a lot of green space if it's going to comply with that legally, it seems to me. I just have to say that I wish when the Aiken Corporation comes to us with a proposal, you know, to spend this kind of money, I don't think it would be too much to have attached to it the amount of land we're buying, an appraisal on record, and a plan, a drawing of what's going to, of something that's going to happen there.
Well, there have been several conceptual plans that some council members, I don't know, all of you in the center of the night, they've been passed around.
Well, they have.
But it's just conceptual, you know, fountain, greenery, that type of thing. But what I would hope that if you buy the property, that city council would allow the design committee of the Downtown Development Association to work with city staff and develop a plan for the use of that park. If Wesley donates some property, they would also want a person or two from the church to serve on the development committee, whatever you would call it. But you know, why not go ahead and do that now? My guess is that it would probably take a year. 6 to 9 months if you pushed it to come up with a plan that everybody would buy into.
That would be a plan that would also have to come back to City Council.
City Council owns the property and they would have final say so on what goes there. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne.
My name is Mike Lander, Clearwell 306 Carlton Avenue. In soliciting the funds for this piece of property, it was clearly told to the people I solicited from that this land would be strictly a green space owned by the City of Aiken, not by the Aiken Corporation, which will eventually let the Manual Center use it as a parking lot. So it has to be green space, and it's going to be, that's what the money came for, so that's what it's going to have to be gone for. I had heard during the last year that we had tried to tie this property down at a specific cost, like a land option. But Ronnie Bolton always said, don't worry about it. We're not going to sell it. We want to somewhat commit it to the city of Aiken. So I think that's why we never got any formal on it. But I can't say that for sure.
I could take that the other way and say they had a sure buyer out there at some time and they were going to meet our price.
Take it away any way you want it.
That's great bargaining.
But we all know what the land value in the city of Aiken have done. They don't double their quadrupling. So it's still, to me, an extremely good buy.
Do you know how much land is involved here?
If you push me, I would say at least comparable to the land that I'm familiar with. I would say at least 3/4 acre.
I just can't tell, but you know where the Emmanuel Church property, where the Wesley Methodist Church property.
There's a fence to it right now. There's a fence out.
That's where it ends. That's where their property absolutely.
That's right. And
ends.
Then there's a fence where the Emmanuel Center stops.
They don't own a thing on the inside outside of that fence.
That's right. It's all going to be city property.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
You know, all these things are fine to talk about, getting appraisal. The point is, to me, do we want this land that we can control or not? Do we feel that this is a valuable piece of property? Irregardless of how big it is, irregardless of the appraised value, the person has said that he's not going to sell it. He will sell it for this amount of money. I mean, appraisals are fine. We get appraisals all the time, but, you know, it's what the supply and demand. Are we willing to take a chance to let it sit out there and someone else get it, or is it important for us to do this? Especially now that the Aiken Corporation has gone out on their own and raised $20,000 for this, and that's very commendable. You don't do that overnight either. I know, Mike, you've worked hard, Wade, all of you. I think it's a piece of property that we need to keep control of. It's very valuable. It's historic. And so I wholeheartedly support it. And I doubt if we had an appraisal on Hopeland's Gardens when that went through council. That was a hot issue at the time. It passed 4-3. But that was kind of a heated argument situation back in the 70s. And aren't we glad we've got that? And all those decisions are not always made on the right side, but I think that's certainly a sign. And I think we ought to buy this piece of property.
I don't disagree that it's not an important piece of property. I just think this is too much money for it. That's my
opinion. Okay. Fine. Anyone else? If not, show of hands, all in favor of purchasing this property? At what, $240 plus the 20. Okay. What? I'm sorry, I didn't catch the numbers. Okay. All right. Opposed? Opposed to. Passes 5-2. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for all your hard work, Mike and Wade and your team there. Item 2 is scheduling of Aiken Horizons for February 3-4, 2006. Mr. Leduc, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Council has always set aside some time to sit down with staff for half day on Friday, half day on Saturday. We again would like to do this. We'd like to hold the planning session at Rye Patch and to schedule this for February 3rd, starting around noon on that Friday and then ending more or less at noon on this following day. This will give us a chance to go over several items and issues that we feel are important, and then also to discuss what goals you would like to have for the next fiscal year as we begin our budget process. So for your consideration, this would be approval of the dates for Horizon Retreat to be held at Rye Patch on February 3rd and 4th, 2006.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, and this discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Pass it unanimously. Okay. That's it.
What you going to cook?
Huh?
As long as Pete cooks.
What?
As long as Pete cooks.
We stand adjourned. Pete, congratulations on the reaccreditation. We didn't talk about that. But